Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Rebel Room, January 24th, aught 9. Ryan Green, Rob the Python.
Yo, yo, yo.
Mish, here to talk about UNLV Utah, Saturday afternoon at the Thomas and Mack Center. UNLV comes away 75-65. They are the cardiac come-from-behind kids yet again, second time this week. Three straight victories in Mountain West play. They're now 4-2, tied atop the league standings going into a week off. Pretty short and sweet, simple day at the Mac for the guys. It wasn't a whole lot different from Wednesday night. Falling behind before half, changing up what needs to be changed up, get out of there with a win.
What was I doing the yo-yo-yo for? I've been talking to Dario Santee too much. He's a closet rapper, you know.
Oh, boy.
He's so quiet, but Deshaun Mitchell gave me the lowdown the other day, and they can't shut him up in their suite over in the residence hall. So, anyway, a little insight for people on Dario Santee.
He was a, I don't know what he was today, but...
Quiet.
Yeah, as which is what he usually shows us.
Yep.
But enough other guys stepped up. Trevon Willis in the first half, Wink Adams to start the second half, Mo Rutledge in the middle of the second half there somewhere, Oscar Belfield... did a little bit of the closing.
A lot of guys
chipped in there. We'll get into all that.
Yeah, but being a little technical, they went small where they're comfortable with, and that kind of turned the height disadvantage into an advantage.
We're setting things up here.
This isn't a 58-minute show, though.
Yeah, it's been pretty close.
Has it?
It's okay, though, because people are listening, so that's all that matters. Yet again, that's Rob Mish. I'm Ryan Green, and... Well, we're going to talk UNLV Utah, and let's start right at the beginning, as we always do. First half, UNLV was backing. I don't know if we want to say backing down, but had difficulty figuring out how exactly to attack Mount Neville, Luke Neville, 7'2" center for Utah, who in the first half blocked four shots and altered what I'm assuming was about five or six times that many.
Yeah, you know what? It seems like he had more than four blocks too.
Yeah.
They had a lot of difficulty. They weren't being shy. UNLV was taking it to him.
Yeah.
And he was blocking him. He was swatting him.
Yeah.
But they were also playing very conventional. Santee started. He played 12 minutes in the first half. Masamba backed him up, played all the 8 minutes of reserve time at the center position. That's 20 minutes with both centers in the first half. Very conventional. When they went unconventional is when the tide turned.
Yep. They went unconventional about midway through the second half.
Even before then,
yeah.
They only played a combined 7 minutes, the true centers in the second half. So it was from the get-go, too. What probably gets overshadowed in this a lot, Oscar Belfield told me after the game, is just what Wink provided them to start the second half. It was immeasurable. He had a hand in the first 13 points to keep it tight and to keep it close to get him in position where they could turn the tide.
Yep. And I mean they went conventional earlier. The tide, they really didn't take full advantage of it until late, and it really started right before halftime. Trevon Willis hits two threes, career high 22 points for the sophomore Memphis transfer. That really gave them a little spring before the break, and then they came out and let's talk about Wink Adams, because it, yet again, doing what he does best, those mid-range fall-away jumpers. He was taking it to the basket. He scored 12 of his 14 after the break, and most of them were right there, right off the bat to start the second half. And he picked them up when they needed to be picked up.
Yeah,
again,
he had three jumpers, and let's see, he sandwiched two fadeaways with a straight up jumper, and it was that third jumper that really started getting the crowd going.
Yep.
You could tell that they were the possibility was there that they could really start to feed off this crowd, which was again very decent, 15,000 plus. They are averaging more than 1,000. They're averaging just a bit more than 13,000, which is more than 1,000 over last season, which was the highest so far in the Lon Kruger era. So they're well on their way to setting a Lon Kruger attendance record. But back to Wink, that third one fired it up. Then he had another jumper, two free throws, had the quick dish to Trey for the three-point play, and then hit another jumper. He was really feeling it.
Yeah, he was, and guys kind of took their turns, because let's go to, I guess what we could really look at as the point where things really did turn. About a little over 13 minutes left to go in the game. Rene Rougeau comes out, Oscar Belfield in. They go small. They had a lineup at that point with Willis, Adams, Belfield, Mo Rutledge, and Bryce Masamba. So they went smaller, and they went even smaller than that as it went on.
I think they had their smallest five of the year.
Yeah.
For a stretch tonight.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
But that's right after that. Right after that is when Rutledge hits the two threes. Willis I don't even know what you'd call it. He got Dirka out with a crossover and then stepped back and hit a baseline jumper in between those two threes. And boy, things just that tied the game, or that put them up 50-48. If I remember correctly, it put them ahead. Either way, after Willis hits that jumper, they never trailed again.
You're wrong.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are wrong.
Where did they trail again?
You're talking about Trey's jumper that made it 50-48?
Yeah. It was tied again.
Yeah, it's tied again.
Yeah, but they never trailed again, is what I'm saying.
Oh. But the actual guy who gave them the lead for good was Kendall Wallace. We'll get to Kendall Wallace. But Bryce wasn't on the court at that time. They were very small at that time.
No, he was when they brought – he came off not too long after, but he was still on the floor.
Mm.
But it was either way, they were small for a lot of this game, and you know, this is kind of a developing theme with the small ball. This team is they're finding these strides with it when they play well small. Now here's my question for you, Rob. Before we hear some post game comments from some of the guys, the big guys have, you know, they kind of stepped back into the light against BYU. They looked pretty active against Wyoming too, if I remember correctly. Except, you know, they have these tendencies, Bryce Mesamba and Darius Santee, where they will disappear off the map for a while, and the small ball finds success. Do you see any point coming up where they rely on small ball and those guys get real reserved minutes?
Absolutely. I think we were really close to seeing stretches there where it was TCU.
Yeah.
Where
they only played six minutes.
Kruger
yeah.
started small. So I think we just might see a lot more of that. It's what they're most comfortable at.
Yep.
Dagher is, as odd as that looked today, Dagher is comfortable guarding 7-2 Luke Neville. He did it last year both times. You saw Mo Rutledge giving up almost a foot to him, trying to front him and hoping he had help behind him, and it was there. In fact, when Mo went on that streak and hit that three, Oscar, Dagher, Mo, Trey, and Wink were on the court. They were small, and that's what screwed them up. Mo's two threes were key because what Utah hadn't seen to that point was one of those small guys playing him. So what they did is UNLV played the bait and switch up top with the screens with the four and the five, with Joe playing center, with Mo playing playing four. So they were using Joe as the pick, and Neville was rolling with him. Mo was wide open.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what created those openings. And Neville, we both talked to Neville afterward, and it appeared that he belonged in the movie Vertigo. He didn't know whether to turn left, right, which way was out, back, which way to leave the arena. I mean, they were flummoxing. He was hesitant. He absolutely said he didn't know which way to turn. Of course, they could have combated that by playing zone. But this is a team with blue-collar Michigan born and bred, Jim Boylan, who doesn't give in to such notions. They don't even practice a zone. So they weren't about to switch to a zone to try to keep Neville closer to the rim. They were fading out. They were pulling him out. And that was the start of the end for the Utes.
And you were right. They you know, Dagher's on the floor when they hit those threes. He came in about 45 seconds after when Belfield checked in for Rougeau. So Masambo's with him for a little bit, but they didn't go on that run until Dagher
came in
the game.
That's what I was saying.
And that's just for clarification's sake.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, Mesamba and Santee didn't come in the rest of the game.
Right.
So, you know, they found what worked.
Right.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. First, here is Lon Kruger, Wink Adams, Trevon Willis, Oscar Belfield talking a little bit after today's 75-65 UNLV victory at the MAC. Guys, take it away.
Just a big-time battle. I thought Utah was great in the first half, and our guys worked at it. They had a space just enough where we couldn't quite get to the three-point shooters. And, again, Neville is such a big target in there and a big factor even when he doesn't get a lot of touches. Very good players get even better looks around him, and that's what makes him so really, really good. Jim's done a great job making it tough to match up. Then second half, I thought our guys really battled and fought and again, won some battles defensively, and made a lot of good plays for each other, and a lot of big shots at that point when the game was kind of be a margin one way or the other, and our guys made some big shots at that time. I thought we attacked a little bit more in the second half and made a lot of good plays for each other. I thought we started the attack in the first half, but didn't finish it. You know, the second half we said we got to keep going. We got to keep getting to the rim, and either you know, go right up through or make a play for someone, draw a crowd and kick. Or I thought in the first half we were aggressive initially and then got a little tentative to finish. I thought the second half we were much more aggressive to finish. Mo was great, not just the threes that he made, but I thought he got some loose balls, he got some rebounds. I mean, the threes were obvious, but he did some other things really well. But to step up there and make threes at that time, it changed their defense a little bit and how they were covering us, and that afforded Mo the opportunity to step behind and get some good looks, and he stepped up and nailed back-to-back. So it was great to see that for Mo. About midway in the second half, we went smaller. Thought we might get some looks like Mo got there. With the way things were breaking out, and fortunately, getting the looks is the easy part. Stepping up and making them is the tough part, and our guys stepped up and made them. Neville's great. I just think he's such a good player. Plays with great composure, and he's tough. And if you go over the top, there's a lot of room to lob to. If you go behind, he's great at finishing. So he just that's why he's so good. It's a tough matchup. But I thought the guys worked and made him work, and I thought Darius did a good job to start. Bryce did a good job. Joe did a good job when he was in there. He's going to get his, and we, I thought, made him work pretty hard to get him.
Coaches told me, kind of drive out and then bag out, try to create some space so I can get the jump off, and I was able to do it on a certain number of occasions, and once they start respecting that, then we was able to get to the basket a lot. Definitely, that's what Trayvon do. Trayvon can hit shots. He can create shots for everybody, and plus he's another person on the team. A lot of people have to guard, and he can make the defense collapse and create shots for Mo and join those guys. Trayvon, he kept us in the game today. We're just glad, everybody else kind of pitched in and did what they had to do.
Right. It was just a thing with us. We wanted to pick up our tempo a little bit and get into them and make them uncomfortable. We gave him too many open looks, like I said before. And Luke Neville, we was kind of doubling him a little bit. And he was kicking out the wide open shooters. They got too many open looks, shot something like 60% or something in the first half. And we wanted to take that away, close out hard. And we wanted to kind of single Luke Neville more and make him turn over the right shoulder instead of the left. And just make him uncomfortable. It worked to our advantage.
Right. It means a lot to us. We've been preaching all year, we got to protect our home floor, Even though we've been doing pretty good on the road, we got the two slip-ups at Colorado State and TCU. But other than that, we want to protect our home court, in front of our home crowd and our fans. It was a nice environment tonight, nice time to play basketball, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And we just want to come out, and be very aggressive. Me personally, I really wanted to be aggressive and just pick up the slack. But tonight was a total team effort. My pace has been different, not been very frantic at all. I've been kind of letting the game come to me, which I love to do, and just picking my spots, At times, sometimes if we couldn't get a bucket, I felt maybe I needed to provide a spark or a bucket or just make a play, period. So I feel like I did that tonight, and like I said, it was total team effort, and everybody stepped up from 1 to 12 tonight. Yeah, I'm one of them guys that loves, the big games. And tonight was definitely a huge game for us. Like I said, it was a nice time to play basketball today, 1 o'clock in p.m. Almost capacity crowd tonight against a very good Utah team. They're playing probably the best basketball in our conference. So I felt it was my time to step up. And I love for the guys to look at me as a leader. And I wanted to fill that void tonight.
I mean, we're capable of doing a lot of good things. I mean, we just really got to stay together and build our chemistry more and just play together and really just work hard at it. Yeah, I mean, it took a while. I mean, we just learned from the first half. I mean, really, not too much. I mean, he was blocking, a lot of our shots or whatever. So we just had to adjust to him, get him off balance a little bit, and really get the shot up quicker. Yeah, that helped a lot. And plus, anytime you're down, that really kind of motivates you to really, step it up another notch. But that shouldn't be, the reason. We should be able to start off, real good and then keep it going the whole game. But, I mean, it takes time, and we're going to adjust to it.
All right, well, let's continue talking about the second half that was today at the Thomas and Mack Center. Rob, we mentioned talking to Neville, and one thing that both Luke Neville and Carlin Brown brought up without being prompted at all was the pick and roll.
Yeah.
And that seemed pretty vital today, just in the sense that, one, not only did they kind of both said, that our team wasn't very focused after the half. You factor that in with the crowd getting back into it as UNLV's hitting shots, and then you factor in that they didn't really respond fast enough to that pick and roll. And Neville said, you know, the Vegas guards really got heads of steam going in against him, and Oscar Belfield factors into that probably more than anybody. It just really sounds like the perfect storm almost.
Yeah, it was timely too, because when UNLV played at Utah last year, Jim Boylan had a fantastic scheme against UNLV. It was in the chess match between coaches, absolutely Boylan won. Now we got the reverse because Kruger definitely got one up on him in the second half. It wasn't brilliant. It was very basic basketball, and it worked to a T. Belfield in particular took that first one right at Neville, and he wanted to dunk. Wink told him that, man, if you'd have dunked that, it would have been top 10 Sports Center tonight. And I guess Oscar said something like next time, as in Utah, next time. Next time they play, that's coming. And Wink just said, well, that's a tall man. We'll see about that.
Well, you know, the way he did finish both of those, it really made you think of Samardo Samuels, the way he won the game at Louisville.
Exactly.
Two of those shots in it, and I asked him to kind of describe the technique behind those, and he was even having a hard time putting them into words.
We were flummoxed at New Year's Eve.
We didn't
about
know
that.
What to call it.
Yeah, it's not a swoop, a scoop. It's not a fling. It's doggone it.
I'd say if anything, it's a catapult because his arm stays so straight.
That's a great one. You know
a
what?
Catapult.
You know what? We're going to call him. He's got a new nickname. We'll call him Medieval.
Medieval. Oscar Medieval Belfield. Medieval Belfield. That's got a really nice ring to it.
It's dark.
Well, you know, and the thing is, he took it up with so much confidence against a 7'2" guy. And this is a guy, Oscar Belfield, who, you know, I think we're both pretty convinced is still gaining some of that he's gaining that top gear back. After tweaking the hamstring against TCU a few weeks ago, and he at times he doesn't look at full speed still. He shows flashes of it, but boy, that confidence just never wavers.
Yeah, he's very close health wise. Yeah. He's not there, but he's very close. You could almost not even see a hitch today, or maybe he's a half a gear away from fifth or sixth gear. But Luke Neville would argue with you that guy is not playing less than 100%.
Yeah.
Or if you wanted to suggest it to him, because he was, I think, still seeing stars afterward when we were talking to him.
Yep. And, you know, basically we need to – I guess we need to not forget, we kind of hinted at him earlier. We need to – you wrote about him plenty last week, and he continues to produce is Trevon Willis, who really for the second game in a row keeps his team afloat while they're finding their feet in the first half. 22 points, which is a career high, 6 assists to 1 turnover. You know, he said before the season he wanted that 4-1 assist to turnover ratio, and it's not going to happen unless he averages 10 assists and no turnovers about the rest of the year.
Well, but you know what? He's got one caveat. He can, if he turns it on in conference play and gets the 4-1, well, then he can tell us, ha ha, he got it. And you know what? He's nearing it. He's close.
He's got 14-2 in the last 3 games.
That's even better than that. Not bad
7-1,
at all.
7-1,
not bad at all. He's learned a lot in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I think more than anyone. So he even had a nice little twist on our layup line fiasco, didn't he?
Yeah, we've spoken plenty about this, fiasco at Colorado State. But you know, you wrote about it last week, and he elaborated on it even more today after the game. That you know, while he was putting his hand behind his back and Dominique Wilkins
behind his head,
or behind his head, and Duncan, he said, you know, he hadn't flown like that since. Really, since high school, in the sense that this is a guy who goes from being the man in high school, plays sparingly as a freshman at Memphis, sits out a transfer year where all he does is practice. He says he's finally back in that groove, and it was during that layup line where it just clicked, where he said, "My legs are right now back under me for the first time," and he's really shown it. This is a guy whose minutes are up about – he's averaging about 9 more minutes in conference season than he was in the non-conference season. He's playing a smarter brand of ball. He's not getting in foul trouble. He's not turning the ball over. And you know, Lon Kruger maybe put it best. He said, when this guy puts the ball on the floor now and takes it to the basket, he's doing so with options instead of just, let's put our head down, drive to the basket, and see what happens.
He's becoming less of his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
He's learning. He's coming along. He started for the 7th time in a row. And granted, maybe Belfield's injury had something to do with it, but then again, maybe not. He did not start at the start of the season. He had some academic issues, late for a class, whatever. He was just getting into a groove. and started at Fresno State, played well. That was his fifth consecutive start. Boom, he oversleeps for a practice, shows up 2 hours late on a Friday at Reno. He doesn't start. So another step back. Now he's back in there, and he's pretty solid. You know, Rougeau, Wink Adams, Joe Darger, they all spoke out about that layup line and how wrong it was. Even Kruger said that won't happen again. But Trayvon's a little defiant, and that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't choreographed. It wasn't planned. I almost wanted to ask him after watching him dunk like that. I almost remember Maples Pavilion, how they used to have almost a trampoline surface.
Well, we noticed that floor sounded a little.
I almost wanted to ask him, was that thing springier than the average bear? But he was just flying, and he felt good, and he's dunking like he's a globetrotter. And hey, he told me last week, people can read into it what they want, but he and his teammates don't care what anybody else thinks.
And you know that defiance you mentioned is really not a bad thing in the sense that. We're not going to get too deep into this, but we were talking about next year's team. When you lose the Dargers and the Rougeaus and the Adams, who, even with the influx of talent you have coming in with the transfers and the freshmen, who's the leader of this team?
Yeah.
And maybe you're seeing Kruger's mold of this kid starting to come into play because, you know, I think a big part of the, you know, maybe Oscar's health has a lot to do with it, with him starting right now, but also he's playing like a point guard right now. And Kruger even talked about that today. He's playing like a point guard where he looked like an attacker handling the ball earlier in the season. Now he's playing like a point guard. He knows when he gets in there, he knows when to shoot with that little pull-up shot that we talked about to avoid the charge.
Yep. He's had that for a few weeks now, he's developing other options.
And he's knowing when to kick it, when to shoot it, when to do what.
And his timing
is everything's really coming down. The way they put it is his pace.
Right.
He's not frantic anymore. They both said the words pace and frantic. He has good pace, and he's not frantic. And I don't think we can really put it any better than that.
It was good to see him dribbling the last 30 seconds, top of the key, bleeding the rest of the clock out, standing ovation. That was good to see. That was good. They deserved that. That was a really great comeback for the second game in a row.
And a great job. Let's not even overlook the fact of, you know, winning the crowd over in terms of, you know, you got a great chance to capitalize and build a little bit of a home court advantage for the rest of the season by winning at BYU and then coming back and winning a big home game. I guess you maybe bring back, you're probably going to wind up bringing back a lot of those people when you play at home again on, I believe it's not until February 3rd.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. They have a week off until they play Air Force next week. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one guy we can't overlook in this little game, I'll give you one guess.
Mo Rutledge.
No.
Because we really haven't talked about him too much.
No, we will get to Mo.
Boy. We talked about Oscar.
Yep.
You got me stumped, man.
I'll give the listeners 3 more seconds to come up with the name. 1, 2, 3. How about Kendall Wallace? Huh?
Yeah.
How about Kendall Wallace? Let's talk about that guy real quick because he's on one heck of a roll. His last 5 games, he's shooting 60% from 3 land. 9 of 15. He gives them the lead for good tonight with that 3-pointer halfway through the second half. And we've talked about him in the past, and he's really developing into that dependable guy coming off the bench. He's going to give you 1 or 2 threes, maybe some other stuff. We saw him hustle on defense at BYU, and he's really rounding out into a solid reserve.
He is, and you know, basically, you talk about guys knowing their roles on this team. He's seeing his role. You know, they don't need him to be this complete guard. You know, a guy who's going to come in, hit the spot up 3 a couple times, make sure it doesn't hit the side of the backboard, and give you a couple other, maybe a defensive rebound, maybe he had a steal tonight, just a little extra here and there.
Yeah.
And he's looking more and more comfortable putting the ball on the floor as the season progresses. That's something I've picked up on, too. You know, beginning of the season, he maybe had a little case of hot potato as he was getting those extended minutes. Now, you know, it's not like we're seeing him drive and finish, but we're seeing him drive and not want to get that thing out of his hands right away.
He's a coy, clever player too.
Yeah,
he's showing little glimpses of his savvy, and there's a lot there. He squeezes some bounce passes through some trees and some forests sometimes, and he's quick with the action. He's a smart guy. You know, you're looking at him. I know he doesn't play power forward, but when Joe Darger is not here next year, you're looking at probably the 3-point assassin that they can count on right here.
Yep. Even more minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And let's keep it on the theme of the bench, because Mo Rutledge is a guy who we certainly have to talk about.
Oh, my gosh, Mo.
Boy, they went small, and you really couldn't tell almost with the way that those numbers lined up. In the first half, they were outscored 15-5 in terms of bench scoring. They outscored them 15-6 in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And Mo Rutledge had a big part in that, and you mentioned the two threes, but a couple of steals, seven rebounds. He was an animal.
Career highs, 9 points, seven rebounds. Not bad at all for the thick-bodied lefty from Sacramento.
You know who he reminds me of? Do you remember? I don't know if you remember from Texas a couple of years ago, P.J. Tucker.
Oh.
6'5" power forward who, you know, put up big numbers, but he was 6'5", which kind of kept him from, you know, moving after college. He had a jumper that could get out to about 17, 18 feet. I'm not sure if he was a lefty, but still a very similar player. And, you know, let's be real. Mo Rutledge, you're not going to see 3 of 3 from the floor, 9.7 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 assists a night. You won't. But these are the bench performances that you have to get at this point in the year spotting up. You'll see Kendall Wallace spot up and have his game. You'll see maybe Bryce Mesamba spot up, have his game. Oscar Belfield, obviously. These are the needed performances at this point in the season.
To go small, to play the cat and mouse game with Dagher, 4 or 5 up top, play the screens, get Neville down low, and he's open and doesn't hesitate to take them. He has come a very long way in 1 year. When he came to UNLV from the JC ranks, he had a little trouble last year adapting to the big crowds. He's worked with a real ace sports psychologist who's worked with numerous professional athletes, including the Tampa Bay Lightning when they won the Stanley Cup. Dr. Klein has the heaviest championship ring I have ever seen. It could be an anchor for your boat, Ryan Green. So I know Dr. Klein was in the audience today, and I think when Mo hit those threes, he must have been the guy with the biggest smile in the audience, because Mo is not hesitating. He's within the framework of the offense. He had a little tough time grasping the nuances of the intricacies of this offense last year, but he's got them all down now, and now in practice, other youngsters are looking to him for, okay, we're supposed to be here for this play, there for that play. So, you know, it's only going to get better for Mo.
Yeah, it certainly will, and UNLV's now got some time to heal up a little bit. We mentioned Belfield.
Hey, you know what? Let's go back to Mo though, real quick. He's got that real canny savvy under the boards too.
Yep.
Who am I thinking of with the? I hate to say this, but the big rear end in the NBA who used to get all those big boards. Maybe a little Barkley in him, getting rebounds.
Really?
It's probably not the guy I'm thinking of, but.
I know what
Dumars?
You mean. Yeah. Dumars maybe a little fits a little. I know what you mean though with that savvy, because that rear end gets you some position.
And I don't mean that against Mo, that's his rear end. He's a thick guy,
yeah.
And he can use that to his advantage with leverage.
He's 6'5". I mean, he's 6'5" with the body that of not your typical
Mo is 6'3".
Two guard. 6'3".
Yeah.
With the body of not your typical two guard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? I watched him jog across campus last spring. And it's funny seeing him play basketball, and let's face it, a bit undersized for basketball players, 6'7 guys, 6'8 guys, 6'10 guys strolling around. But when you see him among his peers, he really stands out. He was jogging across to a weight workout or something, and he looked like a warrior.
Like a football player. He looks like a linebacker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You would have thought that's a football player. Going to a workout with a football team, so... Yeah. He really stood out among those guys, and he's also a lefty, so he's got that, you know, just he keeps people just a little off base with squeaking in the lefty follow ups and all that. So kudos to Mo Rutledge.
Well, there's a good chance he'll get some serious minutes when UNLV takes on Air Force, who is currently in last, winless in the Mountain West, next Saturday, 1:00 in Colorado Springs. Some time to heal up now for the Rebels. We mentioned Oscar Belfield being close to full health. Trevon Willis banged up that shoulder a little bit today, but he really couldn't get the smile off his face. He had some ice on it, but he said he didn't anticipate anything lingering or anything major to come out of it.
He's due for a cortisone shot, so I think that's coming soon. That the cortisone helped Darius Santee last week. He has a left heel that's really been bugging him. He's got a bone spur in there. It had been bugging him for a month, actually.
Yeah.
So he turns around, gets 15 or... helps with Masamba. They turn in 15-5 at BYU. He said he feels no pain. He just has to watch which kind of shoes he wears. But tonight, Santee, 0-4, kind of back to the drawing board with him, and especially with the Smalls playing as well as they are, with Air Force the way they bomb away. You know, you could be seeing less of Santee and Masamba right around the corner in their very next game. UNLV needs to be wary at Air Force, because it was just two games ago that Utah turned in a season-low 26 points in the second half at Air Force. Tonight, Utah had 27 points in the second half. So that kind of is symbolic of the great job that UNLV did winning the second half tonight, 45-27. There's reason to be, you know, cautious and use this next week wisely.
And you'll be reading about that next week, all week, here on LasVegasSun.com/Rebels. We will be giving you everything you need to know as UNLV is in the week off, and they are heading up to Air Force. What's that?
One last thing.
Okay.
How could we get this far without talking about this great statistic? Possibly the statistic of the evening.
And that is?
There is only one Mountain West team that has a winning record against its eight conference foes. It's right here in Las Vegas.
I think we, yeah.
By beating BYU, UNLV has a 15-13 lifetime record against the Cougars. And by beating Utah today, they have a 21-19 record against the Utes. So UNLV is the only team in the conference with a winning record against its brethren.
Hell of a stat. Couldn't close it out any better myself.
No better way.
Any final comments, Rob?
I just said it.
Okay. And I'm not going to even try to top it. For Rob Misch, this is Ryan Green. This has been the Rebel Room Postgame Edition. We'll talk to you next Saturday in hopefully a non-snowy Colorado Springs.
Ooh.
Talk to you later.